Look, at Hardee's, we think that if you're hungry and you have $5, you deserve a satisfying meal. Like one of our new $5 All-Star Meals, loaded with American classics like a Charbroil Double Cheeseburger, hot dog, fries, drink, even a warm cookie. But hey, if that's not your thing, you can always break out your degree in menu engineering, piece something together from the other guy's value menu. Or just swing by Hardee's, get yourself a real meal. The $5 All-Star Meals. There's no better way to spend $5. Price and participation may vary. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Tax not included.
Blog Talk Radio.
And now,
you are listening live.
Hand off, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught, Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings. And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Welcome to another episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast. Coming out of the bye week, we are here to preview the Big East game of the week, West Virginia at Texas Christian University this Saturday. Recording from outside the heart of college football, I am Bart Keeler. And joining me tonight, an old friend and site manager of www.smokingmusket.com, Mike Miller. Mike, welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
glad you could make it on the podcast this week. I know you've been a little busy with work and whatnot.
Yeah, you could say that.
Well, I'm glad to have a partner because I've had to struggle through the past couple of episodes. But real quick, Mike, how can our listeners find this wonderful podcast?
You can find us on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher Radio. We're on all three of those. You can find us by searching just for the Smoking Musket Podcast. And then you can also listen to our live call-in show every Monday evening by going to blogtalkradio.com/smokingmusket. And
yeah, I can't guarantee I'll have much of a voice this Monday. I'll be at a U.S. soccer game tomorrow night screaming my head off, but I will be there, I promise.
I may be. I can't promise. But we're also starting new this Saturday. I've set up a phone number for all the Bygotters, and I guess really if any of our opponents are listening, any fans of TCU are listening and want to call in, they may, because we've had some fun with them this week. If you want to call, give your thoughts and whatnot before or during or after the game, we've set up a voicemail, and you can call in and leave a message. That number is 304-933-9880. And if you call that number and leave a message, yourself on the live show on Monday, we're going to do a segment just kind of going through there and letting people hear, you know, their voicemails and stuff on the air.
Well, I'm excited to hear that. It'll give me some content, so I don't have to talk all the time on Monday.
It could be really bad or really good. I'm not sure how it's going to go yet, but we'll find out.
This might not be the best week to start it off. Mike, why don't you give us a rundown tonight so we can start this wonderful show?
Yeah, all right. First off, we're going to play the conversation Bart had with Mike Casaza over the week last week. We were a little on the podcast out. That was my fault. I didn't even get it. So we're editing in Mike's interview or Bart's interview with Mike. So Mike shares his thoughts on the team so far this season and I guess as a whole. And then we'll be speaking with a great friend of the Musket, Melissa Treewasser, Dogs of War, who many West Virginia fans have, I guess, met kind of this week. Y'all are embarrassing. Y'all got to stop. That's all I'm going to say about that right now.
You need to understand what rivalries and jokes are. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, carry on.
All right, Mike, before we get into all of that, let me hit some WVU sports headlines for our wonderful listeners. On Wednesday, the WVU volleyball team fell to number 11, Kansas, 1-3 in the WVU Coliseum, but the Mountaineers have a chance to rebound on Saturday as they travel to Waco, Texas to take on the Baylor Bears. And on Friday night, the number 8 WVU women's soccer team will host 19th-ranked Oklahoma State. The Cowgirls and the Mountaineers will start at 7 p.m. at Dick Gillespie Soccer Stadium. WVU is 2-1 in the Big 12 and 9-3 overall, and still has a single digit in front of their name, number 8 overall. Saturday night at Dick Gillespie Soccer Stadium, the WVU men's soccer team will host Northern Illinois in the conference opener. Remember that the men's soccer team plays in the MAC. The Mountaineers have dropped 2 in a row and are now 6-3-2 on the season. This weekend, a really cool experience for the WVU swimming and diving team at the WVU Auditorium, as we will host the West Virginia State Games, a meet that pits the Mountaineers against Davis and Elkins, Fairmont State, Marshall, Salem International, West Virginia Institute of Technology, and West Virginia Wesleyan. Fun fact, I swam against 3 of those schools in college. That was kind of cool. And finally, the kickoff time has been set for next Saturday's homecoming game against Texas Tech. The game between the Mountaineers and Red Raiders will start at high noon.
And one more thing, kind of a breaking news. Yeah, kind of a breaking news. West Virginia basketball picked up a 4-star point guard today. Trey Dooms has found himself on Matt Kirchner's all-time names list up there with Quandarius Qualls. I think those two are probably at the top of the list. So I'll have an article coming out about that. Well, it'll be up when this podcast goes out. So, got a good point guard.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Huggins has struggled to get big-time recruits, but, it's good to see that he has started to pick up a few more in the past couple seasons. All right, that's all the WVU sports headlines I have for you. Now let's play that interview I had last week with Mike Kazaza of 247sports.com. Mike Otter is joining us tonight as the hardest working man covering WVU football. It's Mike Kazaza. Mike, thank you very much for coming on. You've changed positions since the last time I talked to you. You want to update the listeners about what you're doing now?
I essentially have the same job, except that I'm right now. It's a bit unusual. It's a bit more modern, I guess. Newspapers are, I don't know if you guys know this, but the newspaper industry is on shaky footing.
It's
kind of a rumor that's been going around for a while.
I
could regale you. Yeah, well, you and I could tell some stories, and I could probably share an hour's worth of adventures from the past, 2 years or so, but kind of reached the point where, to be honest with you, it wasn't a newspaper thing. It was just something where I'd been there for almost 10 years.
Right.
And I wasn't really sure a whole lot more that I could do or accomplish or that we could do or accomplish. And I had a pretty great invitation to do something the same but different. I don't know if that makes any sense. Like I said, I'm doing essentially the same work, but I'm doing it all online. I'm kind of my own boss. I've got a really good partner that I don't have to worry about beating me anymore, which used to, frankly, drive me crazy. Hopefully Chris isn't listening to this, but it's just kind of a good merge for my career and I don't know, kind of where I've been and where I think things are going, where I know things are going. I mean, it's already going there now. There's certain things about the online industry that I think a lot of people are turned off by, whether they're taking the news or they're making the news. And I'm fortunate to be kind of clear of a lot of that stuff just because the way things are set up with who I work for now, which we haven't even mentioned, but I work for 247 Sports, which is a subsidiary of CBS Interactive. And they've slowly but surely just taken over the the recruiting industry, and they're trying to expand their, you know, their breadth of coverage to, you know, college campuses and in basketball and football. And they decided, they identified some schools they wanted to get in with, and they said, we like this guy. Let's see if we can get him over there. And to be honest, it was a pretty brief conversation, a pretty great offer, and so far so good with the experience.
Well, we're glad to have you, and we're glad to have you covering WVU football and basketball and all that for us. So thank you.
It beats Walmart.
This is true. This is true. Before we jump too far into football, I have to ask, given the current state of affairs that is the NCAA and college basketball, just your overall thoughts about this NCAA FBI recruiting / money laundering bribery scheme. What do you know? What thoughts do you have on it before we talk actual football?
I'd like to tell you that I have unique thoughts or organic opinions here, but it's so early. And
yeah.
I think I'm probably prone to the same reactions a lot of people are, that this isn't, it's not like arresting to me. I guess like it's physically arresting for some people, literally. But like what I understand is things that I think a lot of people have suspected were happening. So what's happening now, I think in situations like this, what's first is never last. So I would think this is much more of a beginning and probably a long and aching story for a period of months to who knows how long, when you consider how long trials and lawsuits may go on. I think it's going to claim other coaches. I think it's going to put people on probation and postseason bans. I mean, this is a multi-layered story right now that is only days old. So when this thing turns into weeks and months old, imagine how deep and how vast it'll be. And again, like my initial reaction was, and this is just because of my focus, it was, well, West Virginia is a Nike school. There's nothing to worry about because this is all Adidas. And then I quickly said, you idiot. There's no way the FBI invested the time and the resources to just do Adidas like they have. This will become Nike. This will become Under Armour. This will become Starter and British Knights and New Era and Starberries and who knows, however long they want to go, because you follow the money here. I think what's amazing to me is that you guys might not be old enough for this, but like the Myron Piggy case was 20 years ago, and it's similar to this. I think this is a bit more sophisticated just because of the passing of time and maybe getting around things, but this is similar corruption for two decades. And the Myron Piggy thing was the result of years and years of these things going in that direction. Why hasn't this been cured? I think that's the one thing that you really have to ask and look at. You know, there's the what, and then there's the so what, but there's also the what now and what next. I think we're going to see the what and the so what pretty quickly and pretty dramatically. But what happens now, and how do we make sure that, you know, in 2037, we're not talking about the case that got Rick Pitino or this head coach or this top five recruit? You know, what's the legacy of this? Well, maybe it should be that this shouldn't happen again. And I have no idea how you do that.
Well, I've been around college sports for a long time. I was a college athlete. I won't pretend to tell anyone that there isn't some sort of corruption that's just inherent. And people who think this is all, you know, that there is no one who's doing anything wrong and everyone, there are people who do it the right way. You're looking at it with rose-colored glasses, because there's something that every school has done, whether they get caught or not, that is a little shady. And that's just the reality of the situation, in my opinion. But, you know.
I think the legacy of maybe the greatest coaches and the winningest coaches, and this is going to sound like an indicting opinion, but like, is being clean. And what I mean is that it's very easy to go wrong, and it's very easy to get caught. It's hard to stay clean, and it's harder to hide your transgressions. And I think nowadays you look at everybody and you say, wow, is this coach 100% clean? Or wow, how has this coach kept it all swept under the rug for this long?
Well, and that's going to be what we're going to find out more and more as this case unravels. But we'll talk about football now, specifically West Virginia football. I would imagine that most people who want to talk about the WVU team want to talk with our offense and most specifically with our quarterback and passing game. But I want to ask you about our run game, because we've had Justin Crawford go for more than 400 or more than 100 yards each game this season. So that's four games, four 100-yard performances. Do you think he's going to start seeing more carries, or do you think that Spav kind of likes the percentages that he's running right now, and it's just been he's been very efficient? Do you think they're going to utilize him anymore, anything like that?
I think that Jake Spavital loves the fact that we're having this conversation. And I mean specifically you and I. I know he's a big fan.
Good.
but I also think that this is similar in defensive meeting rooms around the conference. I think the fact that it's kind of a bit unpredictable is probably frustrating if you're rooting for the team. Certainly if you're betting on point spreads and over-unders, right? But I think if you're sitting down in the dark film room and you're trying to get tendencies and trying to figure out what you're going to take away or what you expect Jake to do based on what your defense does, you're probably frustrated as well, because I don't think he's put a lot of habits on tape yet. And I think that's probably to a purpose. I don't know what you would take away. Do you take away Crawford? Well, what are you doing? Are you taking away inside zone, or are you taking away some of the power stuff that they've done?
Right.
Are you taking away four wide with one back, or are you going to take it away when they go with that 11 personnel and they pull Eli Wellman into the backfield? All right, now you succeed taking away the run. What do you do when they put the second running back in there, which we haven't seen a whole lot, and I know that's in their repertoire. Congratulations, you stopped all their run games. Now you've made Will Greer mad and put him in the pocket to drop back 40 times, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be happy to do that. And conversely, if you're going to go in and you're going to stop their pass, you know, or control their pass, you know, what are you doing? Are you stopping three receivers, or are you stopping four? Is Sills inside, or is he outside? What do you do when Marcus Sims is running at your safety? I think that by and large, they've shown a lot, but they haven't shown a lot. And that probably doesn't make any sense, but they've just kind of like, they've dotted the mural. They haven't really colored it in very much. So I really like what they've done with the run, and I think that over time that they're going to give Crawford that 25 carry day. But I also think that that's a guy who could sustain on 16, 18 carries, and Greer can throw it 36 times, and they can get their 500 yards of offense, you know, if they stay out of their own way, which they've done an okay job of that. I'm not sure that this is a team that's going to have a case of the drops all year, but Crawford's been, you know, 7 yards a carry and through gaps sometimes. I think the line has done a better job than it's gotten credit for, but I think the fact they've had pretty good ideas as to how to attack and where to attack has been good, and that's probably something that travels.
By God, you're listening to Mike Cazaza here on the Smoking Musket podcast. He's giving us all of his knowledge that he has about this WVU football team. Something that maybe doesn't take a whole lot of knowledge. West Virginia's got the number 6 total offense in the country. Obviously,
number
that
two.
Is headed by number two. Maybe, oh, I must have looked at the wrong stat then. Whatever, we've got a great offense, and I think we can both say it's much improved from last year. Does it come down to Will Greer, or is it Jake Spavital? Is it a combination of two? What is making everything go right so far this season?
They played three pretty terrible defenses.
Is that what it is? Because that might
they played
be
one. I think so, and I think they got lazy against Kansas, and Kansas got rejuvenated at halftime. And that helps, but I think when West Virginia wanted to score, they scored against Kansas. I mean, four drives of 80 yards in a row on the road against a team that, you know, would like to stop you.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So I just don't think they played great teams, and I think that's increased it. I think Greer's gotten a little bit better in the second, especially the third game, and yeah, he had his moments, good and bad, against Kansas, but I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, he's not going to be perfect. I think he's just a big difference, and I hate to play this game about, you know, Skylar Howard versus Will Greer, because I think when you look at the physical statures and skills and the pedigree, it's not fair. I think Howard did a lot with what he had, but just simple things like the throw last week that Greer made, I don't know, pick the throw he made to Sills. One was a third down play, and he just stuck it in his pocket on the seam on third down. And to make that throw is one thing. To see that throw is another. And to have the nerve to make that throw is an entirely different animal. And he's got all three. He can do it. He wants to do it. And he sees it. I'm not sure Howard has one or two or all three of those last year. I mean, the middle in was hard for him. I don't know why. I think he moved around a lot. He wasn't as tall. He didn't have as big of an arm. And then the second throw he made over the top of the defense to Sills was perfect. I mean, you can't do it any better. So I mean, he just does stuff like that that really helps. And I mean, you can play good defense and he's going to beat good defense sometimes. And I think that's probably a major difference. The running game is just as good. It may not be, you know, as prolific right now, but the fact that they're passing the ball is much more toward what this offense has been, especially who this offense has been. And when you look at who's behind it.
Well, I mean, it's been both the passing game and the running game that have been effective. I think that's the best way to put it. They've been effective. But fans have been a little unsure about the defensive side of the ball. This is clearly not the same, you know, hashtag dogs defense that Gibby has had last year and the year before. But what do you think is missing from what this group has?
They don't get out blocks very well. That's one thing. David Long was kind of like a magician when it came to this. I mean, he just wouldn't get blocked. He was really good at just kind of riding the tackler fullback and getting off of him and being able to make a tackle, or he would duck under, or he would beat a guy to a spot. They missed that, and I'm not sure, you know, how quickly he'll get that back when he comes back. I think Dylan Tonkery did a good enough job for two or three games. He was not at his best by far against Kansas. He got blocked a lot. He took himself out of play sometimes. But again, you're talking about a guy who's a redshirt freshman and is a converted safety who's playing a lot more than he should be right now. That's a big thing. And I know the defensive line wasn't great against Kansas. I actually thought they held up pretty well on the second and third game. And I don't think they had anything to apologize for in the first game. So I don't think that's a big deal. But you're looking at second line players, and there's kind of an absence there. Who's their backup defensive lineman? Yeah. Who's their backup linebackers, especially now? You know, I think it's a concern now without Ferns. I kind of thought it was strange that Holgorsen just kind of dismissed him as a backup and their best special teams player. He was their fourth linebacker. Now Long comes back,
three.
That's great, and everybody. Yeah, Long comes back, that's great. But now you go from having maybe five to having just four again, and again, we don't.
Yeah.
I don't have any doubt that Long will come back and be himself again. I don't know how quickly that happens and to what detriment to the defense when he's out there trying to find himself. I think what's been probably most curious to me is the secondary and especially the safeties. You know, Trayvon Askew Henry is kind of supposed to keep the roof on the defense a lot. And, you know, he's chasing receivers and he's been involved in some busts and coverage. And sometimes it's him, sometimes it's not. He's apologized for his play already this year at times. And he's not tackled very well, which was surprising to me because that was really his strength. I mean, even in camp, people said this guy's making every play, and he was out of position and kind of looked like he was on skates a few times against Kansas. And I think that Kansas running back is pretty good, but you know, he shouldn't be running at Drayvon and screwing him into the ground like he was. So, you know, they missed Avery, who's, I think, been probably better than expected at Bandit, especially against the run. But when you're playing down Kaiser and you're playing down Toyas and you're asking Marvin Gross to play a new position, you're asking Javonte Stewart to play a lot, that's going to expose the secondary a little bit. So, again, that kind of goes to depth. I mean, they don't have numbers 12 through 22. Yeah. And I think if you ask Tony Gibson, they might not even have like 7 to 11 right now either.
Well, I think it's definitely been concerning to watch the defense because, like you said, it's not like we played great teams the past 3 weeks and our defense hasn't looked as solid as it should. But we got past the first win in conference play against Kansas. Obviously we have 8 more conference games to go. But what do you see from the conference as a whole? Is Oklahoma State still the team to beat? Is it TCU now? Is Oklahoma still the top dog? I mean, what trends do you see in the conference this season?
I kind of thought that somebody could make a run to second place. I honestly thought that either Oklahoma, TCU, or Oklahoma State would be there for the championship. But I kind of thought that whoever lost one might lose two. And that a team could sneak up and just have a good day and beat that one loss team and win a tie for second place. So you might have a 2-loss team that does it. So for example, West Virginia, I don't know, they win on Saturday, they lose to Oklahoma, but they beat Oklahoma State along the way, and that becomes an important something like that can happen where, you know, maybe the second best team, according to our observations, maybe they don't finish second place. Maybe they finish in a tie for second, and it's actually third or fourth. Just because I don't believe that there's a huge difference between Oklahoma State and TCU and Oklahoma, but also, are we sure that Oklahoma State's not that much different from West Virginia? I don't know that. I mean, I've seen them play, and I've seen them throw up some fancy numbers. I've seen West Virginia throw up fancy numbers. I'm not stunned by Oklahoma State's defense. I don't believe they have a great home field advantage based on what TCU did. And then again, TCU, it's a good story, but I mean, we've seen Kenny Hill before. We've seen him win the Heisman Trophy in September, and we've seen him fade. He wasn't very good last year for pretty much the entirety of the season. I think he would probably say it was underwhelming by him. And, you know, he was a shaken quarterback last year. I don't think he was nearly as confident. He wasn't Kenny Trill at any point last year. Once things got tough, maybe he's better now. But, I mean, are we sure of that? I don't know. I think the one thing we're sure about is that, you know, Baker Mayfield's definitely one of the best players in the country, and that's a guy who can lead a team. He can pick up an offense. He can pick up a defense just by his play. I think that's the team that right now stands out. And you know, why couldn't it be kind of a free for all for, you know, second, third, fourth? And then here's the thing too, teams at the bottom, but watch Baylor screw it up for somebody and watch Iowa State screw it up for somebody and watch Texas screw it up for somebody. Those are the teams you have to look at. I'm not sure parity is the right word, but I wouldn't bet against Tom Herman, you know, pulling some motivational trick out one day and beating Oklahoma. I wouldn't bet against, you know, Matt Camp finding a way to win at home. I wouldn't bet against, I mean, Baylor looked really good. And I mean, it looks like they have the right quarterback now. I don't know what they were thinking before playing the Solomon kid, but I don't think of their absent talent at Baylor. I just think that those teams are going to screw it up for somebody, and that's going to make the top very interesting.
Well, I mean, as much as I hate to say this, I feel like the Big 12 needs an undefeated champion to get into the college football playoff this year. And, you know, so it's almost like we have to root for an undefeated champion. But we'll cross that bridge when we get to it come December. But, you know, I think the biggest storyline going into the season for me anyway was that Dana Holgorsen is no longer going to be just – he's no longer calling plays. He's now going to be a real head coach, if you will. How do you think that this adjustment has affected him? Do you think he's grown into this? Do you think it was time? What are your takes on Dana Holgorsen as being a true head coach?
Incomplete right now, and I don't mean that as an insult. We haven't seen it yet. The one back-to-the-wall moment was against Virginia Tech, and I think everything and everyone – acquitted itself and themselves fine. I mean, it's a drop pass, or it's a pass a step behind David Sills from being, you know, a different game. I think right then and there we have a pretty interesting question about, you know, new Dana Holgorsen, head coach Dana Holgorsen, because I've been told they had a 2-point play fired up and ready to go. They were ready for that.
I have no doubt.
Which means they rehearsed it. They had their player two plays, which means they see one and maybe they see the defense and they call timeout and they go to another one. That means there was some forward thinking. And in the past, if he's calling plays and he's trying to hurry his offense up from, you know, the end of one down to the start of the next, and he's doing that 7-8 plays in a row, if he's watching his quarterback hurdle, if he's worried about the time on the clock and the play clock, calling timeouts and who's on the field for the offense and the defense, there's a lot going on. You know, does he have time to think about not only, hey, am I going for two, but what play am I calling? But
right,
those decisions were, I think, already made based on what I've heard after that game. So I think that would have been an interesting thing, but I think it's probably a good sign. To me, the biggest thing was there's no way he does this unless he had the contract in his pocket, because if he doesn't win last year, he's probably getting fired. And I don't think he wanted to leave that to chance by letting somebody else run the offense so he could be, you know, the wise man, the overseer of the entire operation. That's not, I mean, maybe live to do that another day, which is what he did. They won 10 games and he had his hands in a lot of the great things they did on offense. So, you know, the time was right, because I think every head coach's job is to keep his job. And I think the best way for him to do that last year was to call the plays and get the extension. And the best way to do it this year is get a guy in who can keep everything going on offense, and then he can step back and do some CEO stuff, which he's done. I know he says he's in charge of the special teams, which is perhaps not a good letter of reference right now for him, but that's something else he can get his hands on, he can do. So, you know, we'll see there. But as far as, you know, has he had to come back from 17 points yet? No. Has he had to, you know, pull his quarterback yet? No. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of those things. So I'd say incomplete, but you don't really have a reason to freak out about it yet.
Right. Well, last question before I get you out of here. I know for our SB Nation kind of network, we have a stat profile that says that we're maybe going to get to 6 wins this year. What's the ceiling for this team right now as you see it?
Ooh. I thought the over-under was kind of fascinating because you can make an argument for 8, you can make an argument for 9. I think to get to 9, to feel really good about getting to 9, you probably had to be 3-0 in non-conference. And that didn't happen. Presumes that you're going to have 2 top 10 teams the entire season. And I don't think that there's room for that right now. Maybe, I guess. But I just think that the truth, like if you sat down at the beginning of the season and you were honest with yourself and whomever you're having, you know, beer and chicken wings with, you would say, all right, the concerns are, and you would talk about them. And I would think that if you sat down with the same people at the same table in the same meal today, you'd probably say, oh, man, you know, numbers on defense, you know, depth at receiver, balancing, you know, this and incorporating that. I think a lot of the things that you worried about have probably come to fruition, which maybe isn't a bad thing because there's no surprises. If you and I are smart enough to figure this out, ideally Jake Spavadal, Tony Gibson, Dana Holgers, they're smart enough to figure this out and see it coming and work on this every day in practice. So perhaps they have whatever needs to be fixed, you know, under their thumbs, but sometimes your problems are your problems and you have to deal with them. There are some things you can look at, some projections, some models, some just facts of football that say this is going to be the situation they have to deal with the entire year. Youth, guys who may not be able to hold up for, you know, 12 games in 13 weeks. You know, 8 games and 8 Saturdays is going to be tough. You know, can they continue to roll out second-team defenses on the road and hold off a bottom-of-the-conference team? I don't know, but, I mean, can they – go out in the road and play second-team defenders against TCU and win, you probably don't like your chances there. So I think if they can cover up some of the problems that can't go away just because you can't grow guys up, you can't mature guys fast enough, if they can cover up some of those things, sure, but I think that might be the ultimate answer to that question is, you know, where can they go? You know, how can they disguise as they go along? That might be the most interesting thing. You know, maybe not disguise, but how can they cover up? How can they compensate? You know, how can they figure out what they do and work with or protect what they can't do?
Well, I mean, I appreciate all your insight and just your general knowledge on the program. As always, we appreciate having you on here at the Smoking Musket. What are you doing this weekend? I mean, you don't have a game to cover, but I'm sure you're working.
No, man. The weather's been nice, right? So I have to mow my lawn now. Exciting. It was weird last Saturday, like, I didn't go to the road game. You know, there was no need for me to go. There's a guy there who can do it. And, you know, the internet's a pretty amazing thing nowadays. So you can get everything you need. And I feel like it's some badge of courage to have a press pass and go to a road trip anymore. And that's something you can thump your chest about, but like, I don't know how necessary that is, but games. So I had like 2 Saturdays kind of myself in a row, which hadn't happened in a while. So I'm trying to figure this out. I'm open to suggestions if you guys want to give me an idea or whatever, but, I'm
well,
sure
I know
it'll be
college football
clean and wholesome
Saturday.
That's the one thing too. Like I never get to watch games. I'm en route or I'm in a press box or I'm in a game or I'm on my way to the hotel or whatever. Like I couldn't tell you last time I sat down and I watched like a full game that wasn't one I was, you know, had my head in the keyboard. So like even those games that I watch, I'm not seeing all the game, which is why I have to watch it, you know, a day later too. So maybe that's what I'll do. And I'll try to figure out this. I heard this Alabama team is pretty good. So maybe,
they're decent.
Maybe the Saban character is worth my attention on a Saturday. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I hope you enjoy your second weekend kind of off. And, again, thank you so much for joining us here on the Smoking Musket podcast. It's Mike Cazazza. You can follow him on Twitter at Mike, Cazazza. He's with 247sports.com. So you can follow it's westvirginia.247sports.com, correct? If I have that correct.
I believe that's right. We just changed all of our URLs because of the incorporation.
That's what
it
said
Scout
on your Twitter profile. So.
Oh, well, that's, if it's on the internet, it's true.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyway, Mike, we appreciate you coming by and giving us some insight on this bi-week podcast. Thank you very much.
I'm going to go do my homework now, and I'm going to grade papers because I am a triple threat.
All right. Have fun with that.
See ya.
All right, then. In the category of the United States, the answer is the names of all 50 states and their capitals.
Okay. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Columbus is the capital of Ohio. There's Montgomery, Alabama, south of Helena, Montana. Then there's Denver, Colorado, under Boise, Idaho. Texas has Austin, then we go north to Massachusetts, Boston, and Albany, New York. Tallahassee, Florida, and Washington, D.C. Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Nashville, Tennessee. Elvis used to hang out there a lot, you know. Trenton's in New Jersey, north of Jefferson, Missouri. You got Richmond in Virginia, South Dakota has Pierre. Harrisburg's in Pennsylvania, and Augusta's up in Maine. And here is Providence, Rhode Island, next to Dover, Delaware. Concord, New Hampshire, just up with jaunt to Montpelier, which is up in Vermont. Hartford's in Connecticut, so pretty in the fall. And Kansas has Topeka, Minnesota has St. Paul. Juneau's in Alaska, and there's Lincoln in Nebraska, and it's Raleigh out in North Carolina, and then there's Madison, Wisconsin, and Olympia in Washington, Phoenix, Arizona, and Lansing, Michigan. Here's Honolulu, Hawaii's a joy, Jackson, Mississippi, and Springfield, Illinois, South Carolina with Columbia down the way, and Annapolis and Maryland on Chesapeake Bay. They have wonderful clam chowder. Cheyenne is in Wyoming, and perhaps you make your home in Salt Lake City, out in Utah, where the buffalo roam. Atlanta's down in Georgia, and there's Bismarck, North Dakota, and you can live in Frankfort in your old Kentucky home. Salem in Oregon, from there we join Little Rock in Arkansas, Iowa's got Des Moines, Sacramento, California, Oklahoma, and its city, Charleston, West Virginia, and Nevada, Carson City. That's all the capitals there are.
Welcome back to Smoking Musket Podcast. Our pleasure to welcome to the program a woman who knows about wide receiver routes and blocking schemes and geography. Sophie Wasser with the interception site Frogs of War. So thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you guys, you know, slimming down and getting a girl to talk football. I'm so glad you're not Panthers fans.
All right, Melissa's here to give us some great insight into the TCU Horn ahead of the Mountaineers game against TCU in Fort Worth today at 3:30. College game day is going to be there, so it's lit.
Yeah, so, it should be pretty lit down in Funky Town for sure.
I mean, seriously though, what's the vibe been around Fort Worth? I mean, Fort Worth is a pretty big city, so for game day to come there, what's the vibe been?
You know, it's awesome. We haven't had game day in Fort Worth since 2009, and this will actually be the first time that I've lived in Texas to experience it live in person. And, you know, back to 8 years ago, TCU was really just starting to kind of burst onto the scene as being a team that was ranked annually in the top 25 and just kind of on the cusp of the city of Fort Worth really adopting TCU as their college football team. And so to see college game day come back and all that's transpired in the last 8 years, from TCU winning a Rose Bowl to joining the Big 12 to, you know, becoming a team that is recruiting in the top 30 or 40 annually, it's pretty neat to have game day come back in town and just kind of celebrate, you know, how far TCU has come in the last almost decade. And I think the atmosphere is going to be electric, to say the least. Students are super pumped about it. You know, alumni like myself are really, really excited. I think you're going to see a packed house and an awesome, awesome atmosphere for ESPN Saturday morning.
Well, I mean, I know that Amon G. Carter can get rowdy when it fills up. But, I mean, you mentioned this, the student section, the students getting involved and getting behind this team most importantly. Do you think that the team gathered a lot more support and momentum after that Oklahoma State game?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, anytime you win a big game like that, everybody jumps back on the bandwagon. And, you know, the first three games of the season have been kind of mixed results. And I apologize for the noise in the background. I'm a high school teacher and coach, and I'm watching my field hockey team play, and they're getting pretty rowdy. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, our two home games before were Jackson State, which was a night game, and so the heat wasn't as much of an issue, but the game was over after the first quarter. And then the SMU game was a close game, was a one-score game going in the third quarter, but it was literally over 100 degrees in the stand. It was pretty miserable, and so a lot of people just kind of cleared out. Plus, people just don't look at SMU as a rival, but this is the first Big 12 game in our home stadium. The weather's supposed to somewhat cooperate for us Saturday. I think you're going to see a loud rowdy student section. I think they're going to show out for game day. It's going to bring out the absolute best and the absolute worst in them. And then you're going to have kids that got up at 6 a.m. or camped out overnight, started drinking early, and have been drinking straight till 2:30. I think we're going to have a pretty electric atmosphere in the Carter. Judging by the last time that game day was in town, we played a Utah team that was, you know, a top 25 team and just absolutely blew them out of the water. Just on the back of a really spirited crowd. I think we'll see something similar to that, though. Certainly, I think maybe not the blowout results at the end.
Well, I mean, what do you expect from the best team in Texas right now, right?
True. Yeah, I think it's pretty inarguable that TCU is carrying the state right now.
We'll get to some other teams in Texas a little later in this interview. But, I mean, let's start with, I think, the player that everyone – starts talking with when they talk about TCU, and that's Kenny Hill. I think it's fair to say that his season last year was up and down. How has he improved? What has improved for him to be a little more consistent in 2017?
Well, I think there are a couple of changes. Number one, Kenny Hill has just grown up a lot in the last year, and I think going into his senior season, knowing that this could be the end of football for him, I think that's changed him really fundamentally as a person. Not just as a player, but the way that he carries himself off the field and in the locker room, too. The biggest difference for Hill this year has been the way the team backs him up. Last year, he'd throw an interception. The defense would kind of stumble onto the field. It was kind of, oh, here we go again. This year, he threw that really bad pick in the Oklahoma State game. The defense came out and said, no, we got your back, Kenny. Don't worry about it. Forced a three and out in the next possession and got him out of trouble. He's really become a leader for the Horned Frogs, something that I don't think was true a year ago. And that's carried into not just the way his teammates treat him, but also the way that he's viewed, the way that he just plays. You know, it's not about throwing up 500-yard gains. It's not about Kenny Trill. It's not about 400 touchdowns and, you know, setting all these records. It's about, hey, I want to win football games this year, and that's the difference that I need. And so I think that he's definitely evolved in that sense, and that's a huge part of his success. The other thing is he has a play caller that finally understands him. Doug Meacham wanted him to be Trayvon Boykin, and he is not Trayvon Boykin. Very few people are. But Sonny Cumbie is putting him in a position to succeed. You know, whether they're asking him to throw the ball 15 times a game or 30 times a game, they're throwing routes for him, running routes for him that allow him to complete at a high percentage. They're not asking him to, you know, to throw the ball deep too often. So that when he does, it's a lot more effective. And they've got a running game that's unbelievable. And that has also given him a ton of confidence, knowing that he can turn around, hand it off to one of three or four guys, and that they're going to get him 3, 4, 5 yards a clip and make his second and third down conversions a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned the running game, and I think Darius Anderson's the guy who obviously jumps off the page. But, you know, is that given Gary Patterson more of a comfortable offense to work with? Do you think that he likes having that run game so that he can coach his defense a little better?
Yeah, I mean, Gary's a defensive guy, you know, 100%. Yeah. And so for a defensive player, when you're throwing the ball 55 times a game, you're asking the defense to be on the field a lot longer and to make a lot more plays. And so it's been a huge deal that the Horned Frogs can come out. They can throw the ball 7 straight times like they did against Oklahoma State and then run it 25 times in a row as well. And it's just an amazing thing for Patterson because he can shorten the game, he can keep his defense off the field, he can rotate guys in and out, keep them fresh, and you know his defense is able to grind out drives when they need to, and so that's just the defense to look a lot better. They've been getting leads, you know, in the back of the end game, and they're forcing teams to play catch up, make them one dimensional, and that's where the 4-2-5 is at its best.
Well, I mean, you got Anderson. I'm going to try to say this name, Oloniluwa. Huh.
Jaywo Oloniluwa.
Yeah, that. Definitely leading the team in terms of production. I mean, Kyle Hicks also a returner. I mean, those guys are averaging with substantial carries, more than 5 yards a carry. So what's been the catalyst behind this really productive and efficient run game?
Well, a big part of that's been the offensive line play. TCU went out and got an alum from Arizona State, convinced him to come back to Fort Worth, and he's made a massive, massive difference in his first year. They basically returned the vast majority of the offensive line from a year ago. They made the move with Austin Schlottman sliding him over from center to guard, giving the Frogs one of the most athletic guards in the country. Unfortunately, in the game against Oklahoma State, Patrick Morris went down with an injury, so it looks like Schlottman will be starting at center again Saturday afternoon. But the run game, just the way that they're able to block and move and the schemes that they're able to use, combined with just really, really talented backfield. Darius Anderson's been a revelation, not just at TCU, but on the national stage. Kyle Hicks, it looks like he's back almost healthy, and he's expected to probably get, you know, somewhere between 10 and 12 carries, maybe a couple touches in the passing game on Saturday. He brings a dimension that TCU just doesn't have without him on the field, not just as a runner, but as a pass catcher as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he had 86 yards before getting re-injured against SMU in the first half. I mean, the guy's just a beast on 11 carries.
Yeah.
And then Shalo is he's a fat truck running through the line, and he still has a little bit of speed. He can hurdle people. I mean, a lot to deal with. And then you combine them with Kevontae Turpin and Kennedy Snell, a couple of water bugs that run 4.3 40s and can catch the ball, can run the ball, can bounce it outside, can make people miss. It's just a lot for opposing defense to game plan against. And Sonny Cumbie and Curtis Looper have been super, super creative in their play calls. And so it's really hard to predict where they're going to run or how they're going to run. You just know they're going to run it. They're going to find a way to be effective doing so.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned a couple wide receivers, because I guess my question here, and granted, West Virginia with Will Grier has developed a good relationship with a couple of wide receivers, but I mean, it doesn't seem like Hill has found his favorite target. I mean, I know guys have more catches, but it doesn't seem like he has his favorite. You know, is it fair to say that this is kind of a receiver by committee, or is it just Hill, you know, what's going on with your receiver corps?
Well, you know, it's a little column A, a little column B. You know, for part of it, it really isn't that there's a go-to guy. There's not that 6'2" guy that, you know, never drops the ball, is going to possess it every single time, and it's kind of your go-to. It looked like it was going to be Ty Slanina, who's a senior slot receiver, who never drops the ball, ever. Like, he is your consummate 3rd-and-5 slant guy. He always gets first downs. That's all he catches is first downs. But he's been banged up, too, and hasn't played in a couple of weeks. But, you know, John Diaris is kind of the red zone guy. Jalen Rager is the true freshman that looks like is going to be an absolute superstar, but he just hasn't developed. And then guys like Desmond White, Kevontae Turpin, Kennedy Snell have tons of talent. They're just not very big, and so it's not like you're going to target them 10 to 15 times a game like you might at number one. So part of it isn't that there just isn't that overwhelming talent in the wide receiving core that's that guy you're going to look to, which, you know, can be a positive and a negative. Part of it also is, too, is just that's just kind of the game plan. Come be a looper. Are trying to spread the ball around, trying to keep opposing defenses off guard. And because we're not throwing a ton of deep balls, you know, there's not that guy always running the fly route, you know, on the outside that you're trying to look for 3 or 4 times a game. So it's a little concerning as a fan because you want to know who that go-to guy is when it's a huge third down situation. But the same thing, TCU's one of the 2 or 3 best third down converting offenses in the country right now. So whatever they're doing seems to be working.
Well, I think this all kind of – the offensive talk has to sum up with the discussion about the fact that you have one true offensive coordinator. How –
Like a
one
true
champion. What was your – a one true champion, one true – no, that was last year. One true offensive coordinator. what was the sense of – that you had when, you know, you had Sonny Cumbie that he decided he – or I guess he didn't decide, but he was given the sole reins over this offense.
You know, it's been a bonus. I did an interview with Rock Chalk Talk before the season asking about Doug Meacham, and the comments were all, oh, sound great. You're so sad he left TCU for Kansas. And now I just kind of want to be like, oh, see, I told you so. Doug Meacham was awesome. When he had Trayvon Boykin and Josh Dawson and Eric Green, he really revolutionized the TCU offense and put us in a position to have great success for those 2 seasons. The problem with Doug Meacham is he is stubborn as hell, and he didn't seem like he was willing or able to adapt to the talent that he had a season ago, or the lack of talent comparatively. And so Cumbie is young and creative and flexible. While he is the sole play caller, he takes a lot of assistance from Curtis Looper, who's one of the most underrated assistant coaches in the country, was a running backs coach a season ago and is now the co-offensive coordinator. And because he's a running backs coach, he's a running kind of guy. And I think that's an important reason why we're seeing the Frogs do it. But the most important thing for me is, you know, is kind of observing this team overall is that they realize that their best way to win is to run the heck out of the ball and to put Kenny Hill in a position to succeed. And so far, each of the first 4 games, that's what they've done is they haven't asked Kenny Hill to be something he's not. They've asked him to go out and win them football games, and they're putting him in a position to do so.
So I guess the numbers show that TCU has been scoring. They've been putting up a lot of yards. But is that slightly inflated because of the first, you know, 3 games of the season? Or do you really believe that this offense is a top Big 12 offense.
It's efficient. It's not, it's not the Texas Tech air raid. It's not the 2014 offense. But what it is, it's an offense that can put the ball in the end zone. We didn't kick a field goal until the fourth game of the year. And outside of the Jackson State team, we played three really good – well, Arkansas's kind of trash, but two pretty good teams, three teams that are going to go to a bowl. And an SEC defense. So it's not going to wow you by putting up the 55, 60 points a game, but we've seen plenty of teams that put up 50-plus points a game and give up 60. So I think
right.
This is an offense that's really built to achieve it, to exploit Gary Patterson's strengths as a defensive coach and to exploit the strengths of the players. They need to go out and score 50 points on Saturday. I think they're more than capable of doing that. But they would much prefer to win something like 37, 38, and 31, control Big 12 offenses, keep them in check, and then, give the defense a chance to cause other people to make mistakes when they're playing catch-up. And so far they've been super, super effective doing that.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the defense, and it has been very effective. You're giving up, less than 19 points a game. Is this more reminiscent of a Gary Patterson defense?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
I mean, I feel like y'all have lost that identity the past couple, two, 3 years maybe. Is this finally looking like it?
Everybody says that. Yeah, but, there's a big difference
between
giving up 17 points in the Mountain West and giving up 30 points in the Big 12. And I think, that while people have said, TC defense hasn't been very good, it's really been trending fairly the same when you consider the uptick in competition. What's happened, in 2016 was we lost a ton of seniors, and we only had seven or eight seniors and probably only four or five that actually played meaningful minutes. So now what you have is a veteran group where pretty much everybody came back, and, they're older, they're more mature, they understand the system better. They're very, very versatile and flexible. You've got, guys that are playing linebacker that can drop back to safety. You've got defensive ends that can drop back to linebacker. And you have a pass rush like we haven't seen since 2014. It's coming from all over the line. And so that's been really, really exciting just because when, the secondary is always better when you pressure the quarterback. And Mason Rudolph had a very, very unfun day against Ben Benigou and Matt Boson a couple of weeks ago. And that was why they were so successful. A lot of people want to talk about how, TC is susceptible to the long pass. TC is susceptible in the big play. And that's true, but that's exactly how they want it. Patterson's playing the odds.
Right.
He would much, much prefer that you have to complete three or four of those long bombs. And if you do it, you won. But you're not going to run the ball well against them. You're not going to complete a lot of the short stuff. And he's going to force you into a lot of third and long situations unless you are a quarterback having the game of your life. And some of them have had them against TCU, including Skylar Howard a year ago.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's definitely the success. Because as West Virginia fans, we've had a lot of people tell us, your defense is as good as you think it is. And I'm like, our defense, and I think TCU's defense, is built like this as well. Look, we're not trying to keep you from scoring because this is the Big 12. That's just not going to happen, game in and game out. But like you said, it's about neutralizing the players in front of you. I mean, when you talk about the air raid and a lot of these Texas Tech, Oklahoma, even Texas to an extent, they're trying to get their athletes in front in space. So if you can keep them in front of you and tackle them, and TCU's done that. You see what they did against Oklahoma State. Not a lot of big plays. I don't know. I feel like TCU and West Virginia are built similarly in defensive style, and that, maybe not this year West Virginia is. But in the thought process is you can have 2-3-4-yard games. That's fine. But, we're going to not let you get too much on first and second down and force you to have to beat us with big plays.
Absolutely.
I think it's fun.
What West Virginia has been that reminds me a lot of what TCU has been is opportunistic. They're ball hawking. They're going to have two or three guys that look like pro talent, that know how to find the football, that force fumbles, that cause interceptions, that know how to rush the quarterback, and then they're going to have a lot of guys whose job is just to keep the opponent in front of them. And I think they are very, very similar. If you're trying to stop often, and there have not been a lot of defensively dominant teams in the last 5 or 6 years because there has been such good quarterback play and so many talents all across the field.
Right.
And so I think it's effective. And the biggest difference between TCU in 2017 and TCU in 2015 and 2016 has been just turning opponents over. I mean, the Frogs are just on a 2014-level turnover streak where they forced 40-plus turnovers and only turned it over 20 times themselves. That continues. They're going to win a lot of football games.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the pass rush, and I think if I'm correct, and from granted, I watched the Oklahoma State game. I watched the other games, you know, on ESPN replay. But when I was watching live, the pass rush against Oklahoma State gave Mason Rudolph absolute fits. And
oh, yeah.
I don't know, maybe I mean, if I could point at one guy who kind of stood out to me, it was the Benogu kid, number 15.
Yeah.
Who seemed, I mean, coming off the end, but well, really both of your defensive ends were really good. But I mean, I feel like it starts with his ability to get in the backfield.
Oh, for sure. I mean, this is a kid who transferred from Louisiana Monroe. How the heck did this kid get out of North Texas the first time is what I want to know. He's a freak. He's got to run under a 4.440. He has these long arms. He just has such a knack for finding the football as he's trying to take a snack out. And he's an amazing leader. He's already been voted a captain after playing in only 3 games. He was a captain for the Oklahoma State game. He sat out last year as a gray shirt. He gave up a year of eligibility because he needed to be closer to some family members that were sick. And he has been a revelation in the locker room and on the field for TCU. And what he does is he makes everybody else's job easier. And Matt Boston didn't play the first half against Oklahoma State because of a targeting call against SMU. It was questionable, but I didn't have a problem with it. And so when he came out, he was so fresh, so fired up. And so then, you know, Ben gets loose. You're kind of pay extra attention to Ben, and maybe you're trying to double him. Now you've got to deal with Matt Boston and Ty Summers. And then Ross Blacklock is this 330-pound kid with, like, 7% body fat in the middle. It's just an absolute brick wall. It's a cool defensive line that we haven't seen in a while, and it's been a lot of fun just to watch him go to work.
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, it's scary, and I think for your defense, it all starts and ends up front because the pressure they've been able to put on quarterbacks and the ability to stop the run has really allowed your linebackers and your safeties to make some very, like you said, opportunistic plays, but also just some good, solid technical football plays. Any other just standouts on defense that we need to look for?
Well, I think Ramsey J. Hahn has really returned to form. As a true freshman, he was one of the best cover corners in the Big 12, and then he's just been dealing with injuries for the last couple of years. He missed the season with an ACL tear and wasn't really fully healthy until about the last 3 or 4 weeks last year. People are not throwing his way, and so that's when you know that you've got a good corner. He's been really, really good. He shut down Cortland Sutton for SMU, who was probably a first or second round NFL pick in the spring. He had one catch for 0 yards. So that's pretty good. The problem is going to be on the other side. You know, we're missing our starting corner. Julius Lewis went out. He's out for the year.
Mm-hmm.
There are rumors that Jeff Gladney could potentially miss Saturday's game. And so now you're looking at going to the third string with Tony James starting on the opposite side of Tejada. They're going to pick on whoever that is regardless. And while Tony James is a pretty serviceable Big 12 corner, he's not Jeff Gladney, and he's definitely not Julius Lewis, and he's certainly not Ramsey Tejada. So I think that puts TCU in a little bit of a bind, especially when you have a quarterback as good as Will Greer on the other side. The guy we have not talked about, which is amazing to me, is the guy that was the leading tackler a year ago, and that's Trayvon Hayward. He's a little undersized at linebacker, but he had well over 100 tackles last season. He just hasn't had to make a lot of plays because it's really impossible to run through the 1,000 pounds of beef on the defensive line right now.
So yeah.
He's a guy that I think is going to have a huge game and be really, really important on Saturday.
All right, so before we start wrapping this up, TCU seems to be the overwhelming favorite in this game, according to pretty much everybody. I mean, Bill C has it as, I think, like a 13-point win for TCU. The spread is, what, 13 at the moment. Ty Hildenbrandt from Solid Verbal has TCU winning by 17. But just everybody has TCU as the favorite, and I can definitely see why. But do you have any fear of the Mountaineers who have to come into TCU's turf on Saturday?
Oh, absolutely. I don't understand what these people are seeing that are calling this a 13 or 17-point game. I don't see that at all. Your team is really good. And I think that the questions about who have they played, you know, how they performed, you know, they've only played one really good team, and the scoring was a little bit lower, didn't look quite as sharp. I get that aspect of it, but at the end of the day, we know what this Mountaineer offense is capable of doing. The defense is pretty bad, statistically.
Yeah.
Running the ball against them. And at the end of the day, you know, you're asking TCU defense to hold down Will Greer, who looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the country right now, and they expect, you know, they're going to hold him to 30 points, 25 points, if they're going to win by that kind of margin. I feel like TCU is playing well. I think that the bye week was really beneficial coming off of that big win. We saw that in 2014. They beat Oklahoma at home, and then they go and lose that heartbreaker and that school that shall not be named and that game I won't ever talk about again. So having that bye week to kind of settle down and stop reading their own press clippings is probably just what Gary Patterson ordered, so that he could tell them how much they suck and how bad they are. That's what he loves to do. So I'm a little happy for that. But at the end of the day, these two teams, you know, the first three times we played each other were insane. Coming down to the last minute, coming down to a field goal, crazy things happening. I think we're going to see more of that kind of game than we are what we've seen the last 2 years. You know, I read Joe's predictions and everything, of course, and I've been reading the comments. And I think that you know, there's a lot of saying, well, this is the same TCU team. This is the same Kenny Hill. Why would the result be so much different? And I would argue this is far from the same TCU team that we saw in Morgantown a year ago. Like, I was at that game. I did not recognize that team. I do not recognize them today. I don't care how many of the names are. Very different group. So I think that they'll be ready. They'll be humble. They won't come out like Oklahoma State and think how great they were. That was the funniest thing I enjoyed. But at the same time, you know, we just went up to a road team that was ranked in the top 10, that was favored by 13 to beat us and beat them. So the parallels there are a little bit scary with West Virginia coming in, playing a top 10 team at their place, College game day in town, double-digit dogs, hungry, you know, backs up against the wall. It won't surprise me if TC gets knocked off. I think the team will get a little bit better, and I think they win, but I don't think I will be comfortable for the entirety of what will probably be a four-hour game at all.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm right there with you. I see how this is a double-digit, you know, difference. I think it's going to be a close one, and it could honestly go either way.
Yeah,
you,
I agree.
The bye week real quick, and of course, when it's a bye week, us bloggers have nothing to do, pretty much, unless something bad is happening with our team.
Or we find something to do.
Yeah, exactly. We have to find something to do. And Frogs of War, you all found something to do. So so how was it like being on the receiving end of the hornet's nest that I don't know if many people can just, like, how – I don't even know how to describe them. Vicious, but just –
honestly,
I don't know.
Maybe
I don't
the greatest
know.
Season of my life.
Like, fan base drives me insane sometimes. And then to see them just turn and, like, target Frogs of War, it was amazing. I just sat back and laughed because nobody got the joke.
Honestly, it's been amazing. Like, it's one of the most fun things I've ever been a part of as a contributor in some form or fashion to Frogs of War. It's been so fun. And the part of it is the people that were so seriously mystified. I can't tell you the date. What is it? I'm going to get it wrong now. It's going to make me sad. But, like, June 20th, 1863.
June 20th.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep.
June 20th, 1863. I'm going to get that tattooed on my forehead. Not that I need to, because I'll never forget it. Because I mean, the day they ended it up, and so there were 189 emails sent to the Frogs of War inbox. That doesn't count all the DMs. That doesn't count all the direct tweets. That doesn't count all the emails we got to our personal account. It doesn't count all the emails that we got to the Facebook account. I mean, well over 250 to 300 people contacted us. There was no such state as Western Virginia. The Texas education had fallen well off. None of them used the correct your or their in any of these communications, which made it all that much better. It's one of the most special things I've ever been a part of.
So what you're saying is that Texas education is totally fine.
Yeah, I think we're okay. It was – I don't think we ever expected it to blow up this way. The fact that it did made it so enjoyable. I cannot tell you how it's just overtaken our stack. And the thing that's been super cool is College Game Day coming Saturday. You may know that there's a whole sign thing that happens around College Game Day. Not only has the Frogs of War family adopted Western Virginia, but the TCU campus has adopted Western Virginia. The TCU newspaper media organization has adopted Western Virginia. And even Mountain View Sports Network is talking about Frogs of War, writing about Western Virginia. If you expect to see a single WVU sign on Saturday morning, you must have been mistaken. You can count. And then just 500 emails afterwards explaining how dumb TCU students are for not knowing West Virginia was a separate state than Western Virginia. I don't know how to do it myself.
Oh, man. You all don't know what you
it's
like.
Oh, we know.
My favorite part of all of it, there's another VU blog, and they wrote an article about it. Even beginning of the article said, you know, it's an obvious troll. But then they took one of your comments from, like, the comment section on your article and was like, maybe she didn't know. And was like, like, come on. Like, I don't.
I didn't even know that happened. I'm going to send that to me. That's amazing.
Jake,
it's been so fun.
WV Unite, he kind of, you know, poked a little fun back in one of his articles and called you, like, Texas Catholic or something.
Yeah.
A week. It was a week. Yeah. Emailed that. They were like, don't you know it's Texas Christian?
They were Christian? Mad at us.
It was, yeah, they were mad at y'all. I saw that. I got some that. Guys, this is so much better than anything I could imagine. The thing that's so great about all of this, though, is I would say almost to a person, WVU is our favorite Big 12 companion. You know, we came in together. We're the underdogs.
Right.
We're the teams that have always been fighting. We have the kooky head coaches that nobody likes unless you went to those two schools. You know, we have a reputation for not deserving to be there. You were geographically a bad fit. We didn't have the talent to keep up. So I think this is such a kinship there. This kind of kneeling, it's kind of like that big brother, little brother kneeling. You know, last year you guys got to be big brother. Maybe this year we get to do it. But it's been such a back-and-forth affair over the last five games that it really just makes it that much more enjoyable of a rival because we can't be rivals with that other team in Texas. I-35 is Marble Camp Engine. It's fun to have somebody that we can poke a little bit of fun with where it's good natured and nobody's gotten hurt. And so, to me, I've enjoyed every second of it, and I hope that we continue to find ways to bother each other because I think we're going to have some good matches in basketball coming up, too.
It's great, though, because, I mean, I think you make up a good point, though. The WVU-TCU rivalry is very legit in terms of two teams that are fairly comparable, play very, for the most part, entertaining games. Our fan bases may not know all that much about each other, but, I mean, I don't think – it's not like a hatred rivalry, although you may have started it to be that way.
Yeah, maybe that might have been.
You know, but we both share in our shared hatred of the University of Texas and, like you said, that other Big 12 team in Waco.
Yes.
You know, we can appreciate that. So we're glad we're glad to be a part of the Big 12, and we're glad that we get to share it with y'all.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that we'll always be intertwined together as joining at the same time. I went to, like I said, I went to Morgantown last year. Yes, the Big East game of the week. You know, while my experience during game time last year was awful, Morgantown, the people are some of the most wonderful in the world. You know, obviously, I adore you, Bart. You're great. I love City, too. I mean, there's so many things that are awesome about, you know, the Mountaineers fan base and that whole community, and so many things that are awesome about Morgantown that while this has all been good fun at the end of the day, I'm really well-played game between two teams. I love TCU, ton of respect for West Virginia. I just want everybody to come out healthy on the other end.
And then for us to both beat Oklahoma and Texas.
Absolutely. We've got one more year of winning Texas before they start catching up. I'm going to enjoy this year.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, I guess we have to, our last question here for you is, you know, what is your pick? I mean, what score, outcome, all that jazz?
It's a home game, college game day. TCU plays at their best in two occasions. Number one, when their backs are against the wall, nobody believes in them. And number two, when they have an opportunity to prove something on the big stage. And it doesn't get much bigger than a top 25 ranked matchup in your hometown with college game day in tow. I think the Frogs are going to come out and give us their absolute best shot. And I think WVU is going to match and punch for punch early. At the end of the day, I'm going to pick my Frogs because, of course, I am. Like I said, I think they're just slightly the better team. I don't think it's that far, but I do think the Frogs are just a little bit better, a little bit more veteran, a little bit more experienced here. And so I'm going to go TCU 41-38.
All right. That sounds good to me. Melissa, thank you very much for joining us.
The other way.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you again very much for joining us on this episode of the Smoking Musket podcast. Melissa can be found over at frogsofwar.com. You can find her on Twitter at the Coach Melissa. Any other place that you want to be found?
I try to avoid people as much as possible. So
there you go. Yeah.
You can find me on the internet. Leave me alone in real life. We're good to go.
Just let her talk.
Continue to send
me
maps of the United States, clearly labeled maps of the United States, especially the Eastern region, would be much appreciated. I'm still trying to learn my geography, apparently.
Well, we will help you in that endeavor if you need.
I'm so appreciative.
Thank you very much, Melissa. It's great to talk to you.
All right, thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
All right, so again, that was Melissa Treewasser from frogsofwar.com, our brother, sister-ish, whatever you want to call it, site on the SB Nation. Mike, what do you have to say, whatever she had to say? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I think that's about right. I really don't know what to think about this game. I've kind of been torn all week because at times I think we're going to, you know, sneak out the win. Sometimes I think we're going to, you know, fall short. But her prediction's right there in line with about what I have. I think it's
yeah.
The spread and all these predictions, you know, national, I guess, talking heads or whatever, I just don't see it getting that out of hand. I think it's just going to be closer.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think it'll be definitely closer than the spread indicates. Before we dive into our game and give you our picks and prognostications, let's talk about the Big 12 schedule this weekend. Not a lot of huge matchups, to be honest. Ours is definitely the biggest and most important, I would say, of the Big 12 weekend. But let's talk about some of these and chop up what we think of the Big 12. Saturday, we don't have any weeknight games this week, thank goodness, because that was very painful to watch last week. Noon on Saturday, Iowa State travels to Norman to take on the Sooners. Oklahoma is a 30.5-point favorite. I have to say they cover, but I want to know from you, how many points do you think Iowa State can score in Gaylord Family Memorial Stadium, Oklahoma Stadium thing, whatever they call it?
Three? Seven? I don't know. last time I looked at Twitter, there were rumors that quarterback may be suspended. Like, if that's true. But if that's true,
that
then...
That wouldn't surprise me at this point.
If that's true, I'm sorry, Cyclone. Like, it's not going to be good.
It didn't look good at the end for Iowa State last week. They kind of, and you mentioned Jacob Park, kind of had a falling out with the coach. A lot of not good things from him last week. It's going to be tough. I mean, they might get a touchdown, but Oklahoma should roll in this game. And are we at the point now where we kind of have to, I mean, obviously because we want to beat TCU this weekend, but we need Oklahoma to be as close to undefeated, if not undefeated, as possible at the end of the season, right? For the Big 12 to get a team. I mean, like, okay, like, that's the unfortunate reality is that we kind of need Oklahoma to keep on rolling because that's about the only chance that the Big 12 will have at getting into the playoff. Now, granted, if TCU beats us this weekend, which, you know, it's very much possible, I will all be 100% on board with them just winning the conference, and that would be fine. Just saying.
Yeah. I have another Oklahoma Big 12 championship win.
Yeah.
Need some variety.
OU is the only team. OU is the only team that could lose a game and then still make the college football playoffs. Right. Like, they could lose to us, or they could lose to TCU, or they could lose to, like, Oklahoma State, but win the conference championship and still make the playoff?
Unless Oklahoma State was out. That's the only
answer.
I mean, because we would have to go undefeated in conference play. TCU would go undefeated in conference play, pretty much.
Yeah.
Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are probably the only two that could stand a loss and still make it into the discussion. An update, apparently. Rumor is false, and Matt Campbell, a text message to the Ames Tribune that Jacob Park is not suspended and he will play, so they may score 10 points.
Okay, so yeah, we'll give him, I'll give him 13.
That's
give
fair.
Him 13 points. All right, next game at noon, also on Saturday, Texas Tech, a 16.5-point favorite at Kansas. Now, Texas Tech looks secretly competent. But can they hold KU under 35 points?
They are playing some defense this season. I think they may. I think they might hold like 28. They're going to have to score in the 50s? Close to the 50s? Yeah.
I think that game will play out almost exactly like our game played out with Kansas.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, Texas Tech is going to score a lot of points. And then Kansas will go, oh, wait, we're still here. And Texas Tech will be like, yeah, we're kind of checked out. And then they'll go, wait, oh, nope, sorry. Here we go. So I think that's kind of how it'll go, is big early lead for Tech. Not a great third quarter, and then they regain control.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
All right, so last game of the weekend, other than ours, obviously, 7 p.m., Kansas State at Texas. Texas is a 4.5-point favorite. Now, Kansas State was kind of a dark horse pick for the Big 12 championship game at the start of the season. Definitely fell off after that loss to Vanderbilt on the road. But Texas is low-key really not good. Don't let that performance at USC fool you. Do you think the Wildcats can win in Austin? Or is Texas on a run or going to start a run to bowl eligibility?
Well, Bill Snyder owns the state of Texas. And
this
that's going to continue. That's going to continue this week. Texas is not – they're not good. They're not. I'm sorry. Like, yeah, they played USC well, but then USC proved that they're not that great. Like, Washington State's decent. They're the better team, obviously. Go into this. Sam Darnold is not the quarterback that everybody says he is. So Texas's performance against USC was, looking back on it, it's not that great.
And it was still a loss, people. It was still a loss. Texas is 2-2 on the season. You know, I understand that you can take that, but are you really giving moral victories to Texas? Really?
Right. It's not like they almost beat Alabama or Clemson
Right.
It was USC with a quarterback that was overhyped, and that was clear last week.
Yeah.
Sam Darnold's just not a great quarterback. But he's still getting Heisman hype. I understand that.
Of course.
Whatever.
Of course.
Yeah. So I can't stay with this one.
I mean, again, Texas is a 4.5-point favorite to begin with. I think that is crazy that they would even get that big of a spread, to be quite honest. I understand that Kansas State doesn't score a whole lot, but they are a more experienced and, I think, better all-around team. They average more points than Texas a game. They average giving up fewer points than Texas a game. Texas has shown that they aren't great at defending the passing game. And, again, that's because Sam Darnold really not that great, that USC didn't score more points. But, I mean, I don't know. I just see Kansas State being able to slowly and methodically put Texas away in Austin, the library at Austin. All right, so let's get to our game. WVU versus TCU, 3:30 p.m., Fox Sports 1, Amon G. Carter Stadium, Fort Worth, Texas. What are your – I mean, we kind of said our initial thoughts, but what are your kind of initial insights to this game?
I don't have a good read on this game because I don't know how good we truly are, because we played bum teams except for Virginia Tech. We played bum teams for the last, three games.
Yeah.
Our offense is number 2 in the country, but that's against Delaware State, ECU, and Kansas.
Yeah.
Are they going to be number 2 in the country? Are they going to show that level against TCU's defense? Because we know TCU has a good defense. They usually always do, except for last year, which was weird. But I just don't know about this game.
Well, I mean, we have to address the huge elephant. Actually, it's a tiny elephant, unfortunately, in the room, and that's our defensive line is crap. I'm sorry. I don't want to talk crap may be too hard, but they're not what we need them to be.
No, if we could have a defensive line made up of all Lamont McDougals, we would be awesome. I love that guy. Like, he's come in and performed so far and away better than what I expected. Like, we just need more of that. And we're not getting that from the other positions on the defensive line.
And we're not getting a lot of production. Kazaza hit on it in his interview, and it's the same kind of thought that I had. They're not getting off the block. And if you don't get off the blocks, you can't do two things. You can't rush the passer, and you can't stop the run, which are two things in this defense that the defensive line has to do. Our back, eight, are still doing okay. And I know they've come under a lot of fire, but they're doing okay. It's our defensive line that has to step up. So, talking about defense, does Kaiser White continue his track record of murdering people in the state of Texas?
I hope so. I hope Kenny Trill gets a of Kaiser White.
This is my question. Is Kenny Trill actually good? I'm sorry. They have not asked a lot of him this year, which is 100% because they have a very good run game. And I get that. His offensive line is good. His run game is good. But you can't tell me that he's somehow a better quarterback. And Melissa talked about it. They're using him better, which is good. But I'm sorry. He's not as good as people make him out to be, in my opinion.
And we've done this like the last 3 years or however many years he's been playing. Mr. September Hyde. He's good in September.
Yeah.
This game, like, in many ways, this game is a litmus test for –
Yes.
So many aspects. It's a litmus test for us to find out how good we are. It's a litmus test to find out if our defense can hold up against Big 12 offense. It's a litmus test to see if Kenny Trill, if he's, you know, worthy of any kind of hype after September.
Yeah.
I don't think he is.
Well, and it was the same kind of story for him last year, to be quite honest. He had a very good September with TCU. They were doing well when they came into Morgantown, and we made him look very bad. Now, we're going to have to go play in Fort Worth, which, though it's a smaller stadium, the atmosphere there is very different because that stadium is a very weirdly configured structure, and it just rises up, and it's almost like the fans are, even in the top deck, like leaning over on top of you. So that is a very different atmosphere that clearly, you know, as the home team, Hill has done well in Amon G. Carter, but that's going to be the difference maker, I think, most importantly, is that he will probably feel more comfortable at home and our defense will feel uncomfortable playing on the road, which should help him. But he is prone to giving up turnovers. He's thrown, you know, 9 touchdowns this season, but he also has 3 picks to go along with that, which isn't terrible. I mean, 3 picks in 4 games, but, you know, they haven't played super great teams. Like, let's just be real honest, you know, it's not like Jacksonville State is turning the ball over, you know, much against anybody. So I don't know if we know how good he is. Granted, they haven't had to use him as much, but it's just one of those things where I want to go pump the brakes a little bit on Kenny Hill. That's all I'm saying.
Right. And a lot of people need to pump the brakes, like just overall. This going in, I've almost kind of crazy this week listening to everybody talk about this game. I don't understand. I'm not even gonna call it disrespect. Aren't well informed West Virginia, like the team. I'm not gonna say the state because we know about all the state stuff anyway. But yeah, like I almost started a new segment this week on the podcast where I'm gonna call people out. But Ty Hilton of the Solid Verbal was my first target. In the new episode, the preview episode, we're talking about, and Ty says he thinks it's going to be TCU. It was like 40. It was like a 40-something to 28. It was a 17-point win. And he said his reasoning behind that was because he only knew about TCU. He knew that TCU was good enough to beat Oklahoma. Or Oklahoma State, and that his offense was nowhere near Oklahoma State. Number 2 in the country in total offense. Yeah, we're number 2 in total offense behind Oklahoma. Oklahoma State is behind us at number 3. So we are just as good, according to stats. And, you know, I don't know, competition level might fall in, and I don't know if we really are number 2 in total offense, if we're going to show that. But the stats are, right? And then he went on to say that Daniels is a tight end. And right there, I lost, like, do some research.
Yeah.
Stills at one point, he still is, but at one point he was leading the country in touchdown receptions. Wide receiver.
I don't think he is just because, we had a bye week.
Yeah. Anybody that follows college football and has heard Bill's name should know that he's a wide receiver. And it that just kind of like, come on, man.
Well, I mean, I think you have a point that I want to say the line has been made because, oh, well, they didn't beat Virginia Tech and TCU did beat Oklahoma State. But they're totally different teams and they're totally different atmospheres. But look, we both have top 25 total offenses, both top 10 scoring offenses. TCU definitely has a better defense. There's no doubt about that. But in my opinion, we will still be able to score points on TCU. I mean, look, people want to talk about how TCU throttled Oklahoma State, and they did. Oklahoma State still got 31 points on them. That's not a lot for Oklahoma State, but they only beat them by, 13 points? So it's not like even in their – I don't know. I just want people to go, okay, West Virginia as an offense is clicking at a better pace than what Oklahoma State was. Now, granted, I think Mason Rudolph is a tremendous quarterback. Don't take me anything away from that. James Washington is a hell of a receiver, and I would take him in a heartbeat to be on our team. But let's just not get carried away that, oh, TCU is going to just stomp West Virginia for a couple of reasons. One, I think that our offense can keep up with them, and I think that we have multiple threats in the receiving game, and we have a better run game than what Oklahoma State did. I am concerned about our offensive line holding up to their defensive line, but I don't know. I think this game will be closer than everyone thinks. I predicted a 32-37 loss. I think it's one of those games where it's like a weird score because someone went for two or someone did something. Someone did something weird. This is going to have a weird play in it. I just think we're not – the home field advantage at the Carter is something, and I just – that's my take. What's your prediction?
I went 38-35 West Virginia. But honestly, like I said, I get to go in both ways. I would like to see – and this is why I put in my prediction in the prediction article. I would like to see us win on a late touchdown, Will Greer to David Sills. Just kind of like –
that would be great.
Because I'm really into crushing opponents' teams, like, morale. I was so cheering for, like, just dump on that second touchdown at Kansas. Just like crushing people's spirits. Maybe it's because I'm, like, I probably need to get, like, mental health check or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's fun. Like, I just like – so they've done it to us a few years ago with that last second touchdown. On Halloween, I believe, or somewhere around Halloween. So I'd like to them. I'd like to get a little revenge.
Well, I think we both see this game being much more entertaining than people think it is. And I'll give the credit to the shutdown forecast guys. They definitely they told everyone that this would be a much more entertaining game than just about any other 3:30 game. So if you want to watch two teams who are going to battle hard, this is a game to watch. Again, I think West Virginia comes up on the losing end. That's just because I do think TCU's defense is better than ours, and they will be able to at some point control our offense. That's just how it works. But I would like to say that our offense is still going to be productive, but it's just one of those games that I don't feel great, and so I'm going to err on the side of West Virginia doesn't come out on top. But that's just me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyway, let's get out of here. Thank you all for listening to this preview of the WVU-TCU game on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern on Fox Sports 1. Thanks to Mike Kazaza from 247sports.com and Melissa Treepwasser from frogsofwar.com for joining us this episode. For Mike Miller, I'm Bart Keeler.
Goodbye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.